You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Governor Walker has called his budget the Freedom and Prosperity Proposal. Right now, we're going to take a look at the second part of that proposal, the prosperity part, in terms of economics.
UW-Madison applied economist Stephen Deller has joined us on occasion to talk about the role that state government can play in creating jobs, attracting businesses, and influencing wages.
Now, we're going to ask him to take a look at the Walker budget and explain the economic rationale behind some of the decisions and weigh in on whether or not he expects the desired results to be achieved. Stephen, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
So we ended the last biennial budget with a surplus. Now we've got a deficit, and Governor Walker is proposing significant funding cuts to higher education, among other things. So why do we have a budget deficit?
Well, the reason we have one is because there was a forecast about a year ago that said that we might be looking at a surplus. The problem is that forecast was wrong. Essentially, the forecast was saying if Wisconsin recovers from the Great Recession at about the same rate as the U.S., then we would expect the surplus to be X amount of dollars. And the governor and the assembly and the Senate essentially said, oh, surplus, tax cut. The forecast was wrong because the state's economy did not recover that quickly. It kind of lagged behind the national economy, and that surplus essentially did not exist. So that tax cut essentially drove a hole into the budget. Now, I mean, when we think about the economy, and it raises the question of, if we did have a surplus, what should we do with it? And this is where you can get into different ideas about the economy. One idea is, well, you cut taxes. It's kind of the supply side economics perspective. And the thing is that the research is really clear. Supply side economics doesn't work. So that raises the second part of the question is, well, what if there was a surplus, what should we do with it? And this is where a lot of economists, some of my colleagues in the Department of Ag and Applied Economics, who are more on the conservative side than I might be, were saying, you know, well, what we really should do is pay down some of the debt, pay off some of the credit card bills that we've run up. We should set some of the money aside so we can ride out ups and downs. And third, we should do some single, one-off infrastructure improvement projects. But we didn't do that. We went straight to a tax cut and got us into a big hole.
Well, now you mentioned the projected budget surplus, which didn't come to pass. But the rest of the country is seeing economic growth. The federal government has income rising or revenue rising. So why isn't Wisconsin following that same trend?
I think it's, again, as we've talked before, is the Wisconsin economy is just simply not keeping pace with the national economy and the states that are around us, particularly when you compare us to Minnesota. And we could spend the entire show talking about why Wisconsin is not doing as well as the other states.
Well, Governor Walker, to dig into the budget a bit more, he talked a lot about property taxes in that budget address, and he pointed out that property taxes stayed down. One of the things he pledged to do stayed down while he was in office. So what is the economic effect of lowering property taxes?
Well, there's a difference between lowering property taxes and actually just keeping them flat. One of the arguments that is made is that if you look at your property tax bill, it really didn't go down. Mine didn't go down. Mine stayed about the same. If it went down, it went down by a couple of bucks, which isn't enough to affect the economy. It's really kind of this general hatred of the property tax. I was involved with one study looking at how people viewed public education. It was not Wisconsin. It was another state. And people said, yes, we support public education. Would you be willing to pay higher income taxes? Yes, sure. Would you be willing to pay higher sales taxes? Yes, sure. Would you be willing to pay higher property taxes over my dead body? We almost have this irrational hatred of the property tax. So if the policy is that we want to keep downward pressure on the property tax, that's fine. But how are we going to make up for the differences? The other thing is that the vast majority of the property tax goes to fund local government services, primarily public schools. So when the governor is saying he's keeping downward pressure on property taxes, really what he's saying is that I'm keeping local governments kind of under my thumb.
Well, the median homeowner will apparently see $5 less in taxes annually. As you said, and Robin Voss said yesterday on the program, that it's essentially just keeping them flat if you account for various factors. But either way, you know, this is a modest number, $5 or keeping them flat. So does it have an impact if you look at the big picture?
No, it doesn't.
So how would you frame it then?
It is, again, this hatred of the property tax, and it was essentially a political promise to say, I'm going to keep downward pressure on this tax that people do not like. And he was able to deliver on that. But the question is then, at what cost is that promise going to play out in the long term?
Well, let's take another area here that's been a little contentious so far among Republicans. Governor Walker has proposed that the state borrow money through bonding to pay for a couple of items on the budget, notably transportation and the Milwaukee Bucks Stadium. And first of all, let's talk about that state bonding. How does that work?
Essentially, what we're doing is we're putting it on a credit card. And from a financial perspective, on the one hand, it makes sense to assume debt now because the interest rates are so low. But it's another one of those who are kicking the can down the road. Essentially, that's how we got into this mess in the first place, is that rather than dealing with the issues and addressing them honestly, we keep kind of saying, well, we'll put it on the credit card. And we'll kick the can down the road a little bit. And that's one of the things that, you know, the governor was fairly successful when he was first elected. He said, no more kicking the can down the road. We cannot do that any longer. And I was like, good for him. That's good. That's the right thing to do. But now he's trying to kick the can down the road.
In terms of the funding itself, is it fair to say that this bonding is essentially public funding?
Well, it is, because the state is assuming the debt. The state has the responsibility for paying off the debt. And where is that going to come from? That's going to come from taxpayers.
So the alternative, I guess, to bonding would be raising taxes or making budget cuts somewhere else. So what do you think the rationale is for not doing that instead of borrowing money?
For not raising taxes?
For not raising taxes, not making more budget cuts. So why do the bond?
Because there is a big... there's general agreement across the board, and we're having the same discussion at the federal level, is that our infrastructure funding is woefully inadequate, and it has been for years. And our infrastructure is not getting any better. It's deteriorating. The budget for it, or the funding for it, has been shrinking, and the demand for reinvestment has been growing. And that's creating a gap. We have to address that. It's important to the economy. It's important to our quality of life. The question is how do we address that? Well, one is we have to raise taxes. We have to take it from other sources, education perhaps, or we put it on the credit card. And what the governor is proposing is that we put it on the credit card.
Now, to take that metaphor of the credit card, you know, you or I get a credit card, it's going to have a max limit, and we can't go beyond that. Are there limits that the state has as well when it does bonding of this kind?
In theory, no. But in practicality, yes. Because you have the things that the credit rating agencies that essentially determine how good of a risk or what is the credit worthiness of the state. The more that states assume debt and pay for more things through debt, their credit rating starts to take a hit. And what that means is that just like your own personal credit rating, if your credit rating is fairly high, bankers are willing to work with you. You may get a better interest rate. If your credit rating is low, bankers may not be willing to work with you. You'll have to pay a higher interest rate. So while there's no legal limit, there's a financial limit.
Well, we're talking right now to Applied Economics Professor Steve Deller from UW-Madison. He's giving us some input on the economic thinking behind the Walker budget and what the economic results could be for the state.
And you can join in the conversation now at 800-642-1234. Do you think that borrowing money through bonds for, say, transportation funding or supporting the Milwaukee Bucks arena are the right way to go? Do you think the focus on workforce training is needed in the state? That's what Governor Walker has called for in his budget proposal and elsewhere. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation after a look at the latest news with Kristen Durst.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're continuing our conversation with Applied Economics Professor Steve Deller from UW-Madison. And we're talking about the economic thinking behind the Walker budget.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the economics behind the Walker budget? How do you think the slight property tax decrease or held flat, depending on who you talk to, will affect your family? Are you happy to see them at least stay where they are? Do you think the budget sets Wisconsin up for a good economic future? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Now, Steve, yesterday there was a bit of a dust-up when it was discovered that there was some editing done to some statutes involving the Wisconsin IDEA, and Governor Walker later said that removing the Wisconsin IDEA was a drafting error, and that got changed back, apparently. But the governor has said in the past that he thinks the university system should be more focused on preparing students for jobs that exist here in the state, and that implies a skills gap. So is there a skills gap in Wisconsin?
Well, before I address that, let me talk about the Wisconsin IDEA. One of the things that makes Wisconsin so unique and so vibrant is that residents of the state view the university system as an asset, something that they can turn to. When a community is dealing with a problem, oftentimes first thing they do is they call the university for help. That's the Wisconsin idea. We have a lot of our neighboring states and a lot of states across the country that are actually public universities that are trying to embrace what we call the Wisconsin idea because they see the relevance of that. We have visitors from across the globe that are coming to Wisconsin to study the Wisconsin idea because they're seeing that that is really what higher education should be doing. So here, Wisconsin is at the forefront. Other states, other countries are trying to mimic what we're doing with the Wisconsin idea. And then here we are going the opposite direction. So it's really very, I'm glad that the governor has backed away from that. But I think it really gives the state a chance to kind of reflect on our priorities. Why do we invest in the university? The Wisconsin idea is a big part of that. Now, to your second question about workforce development, when I finished up my graduate work at the University of Illinois and was leaving, they had undertaken a major reflection on their undergraduate program. The concern was that they were becoming too technical oriented, too skills oriented. We're teaching technocrats. And the university was concerned about that. So they decided to do a self-reflection. They went around and they had a series of focus groups and discussions with a lot of the business community throughout Illinois. And they were shocked. The business community almost uniformly throughout Illinois said, no, we want the university to teach critical thinking skills, communication skills, leadership skills, teamworking environment skills. We want creative thinkers, leaders. That's what we want the university to do. We will teach them the technical skills that they need in the workplace. That really kind of was an eye-opener for the University of Illinois. So I think that the university's role really is much broader than simply training a student to become a better welder, if you will. That's not the role of the university.
And just briefly before we get to the calls we have, do you see this budget aspects of it as addressing the need to get workers into jobs here in Wisconsin?
I think the university's role is deeper than that. I think the university's role, besides the Wisconsin idea and besides an avenue to test new ideas, I think it's really to help the students and the residents of the state really be able to think a little bit more deeply about the issues that the state faces and the issues that individuals face, to be able to think critically, and to be a more engaged citizen. I think that that's the larger goal of the university. And purely technical skills, the university can play a role in teaching technical skills. I'm not saying that we should completely abandon that. I mean, we do a lot of training in terms of like engineering and accounting and things like that, and that's still very important, but that's not, I don't think that's the primary role of the university. The primary role of the university is to help people think a little bit deeper about issues.
Let's get to our callers. Jeff is joining us first in Wanakee. Hi, Jeff.
Good afternoon. I run a small a number of small businesses over the years, and to me, the most onerous thing is the sales tax, which merchants and service providers like myself do all the heavy lifting for and take all the heat about, and then these politicians go and spend that money like they did anything to create that fund. And it just boggles the mind that he acts like the property tax is the most crippling thing, and that's ridiculous. It would be, you know, our property tax lets a bunch of, if he's going to reduce that, it lets all these out-of-state owners who contribute nothing to us and have the benefits of owning property here, and they get off scot-free. That's just utterly ridiculous to me. And secondly, I would like to say the UW system, and I'm a Whitewater graduate, very proud of it, the UW system, and through extension and even public radio, has been just a godsend in keeping me going and helping me keep abreast of things and give me the skills I need to compete and organize my business properly. And he not only doesn't seem to understand that, he doesn't value it whatsoever. He does not seem to be a real world business person.
Jeff, I'm going to let our guest get in on that. Thank you for your comment. Appreciate that. And Steve, what about looking at sales tax?
The sales tax, there's a couple of different things the way economy. Well, first of all, I want to say my wife teaches at UW-Whitewater, so I'm a little connection there. I think that there's a couple of different ways you want to look at taxes. What makes for a good tax? What makes for a bad tax? One of the things that we want to look at is the ability to administer the tax. And I think that that's what Jeff is getting to, is to essentially how onerous is that tax on the people that have to administer it? The sales tax, can be, the way it's structured, can be onerous, but it's generally considered one of the least onerous taxes to impose. But I think we've talked before about the role of kind of small businesses in the state, and I think that the backbone of the state's economy and the future of the state's economy is really in small business development. And here the university and the technical schools can play a very supporting role in helping small businesses. And I'm not sure that the economic development policies that are coming out of the governor's office are really thinking small businesses. I think they're still kind of in that we want to hit a home run. We want to get that big firm to move in.
Okay, well, thanks a lot for the call, Jeff. And let's move on for a moment to education. In the governor's budget, lifting the cap on voucher schools, allowing the money from a public school student to follow that student should they transfer to a private school, to a voucher school. Can you explain some of the economics behind that?
The idea basically is it's coming down to choice, is that we want to try to provide parents and their children the choice of schools to go to. And for higher income communities, oftentimes there's private schools and there's opportunities there. And I think what the governor's trying to do with this is to provide people with a choice. The question is this an effective policy? What kind of standards do we hold these charter schools to? Are we holding them to any standards? Second, is the research suggesting that students that go to these charter schools do any better? And the evidence is saying it doesn't. The third problem is that once you get outside of metropolitan areas, you get into rural areas, you don't have the critical mass for these charter schools to really function. So it's really kind of an urban-focused policy. You get into rural Wisconsin, and it's a non-starter.
And what about the impact on public schools? How do you see that being a burden on public schools, or do you see it as something, Robin Voss was optimistic about that yesterday on the program about the economics. He didn't see a big burden being placed on public schools or on public schools taking a big hit from this. What do you see from an economics perspective?
Well, it's the problem with it is that there's still a fixed cost to running a school. you still have to, whether you have 20 students in the classroom or 25 students in the classroom, you still have the cost of the student or the teacher. You still have the cost of turning the lights on. You still have the cost of maintaining the building. So in that regard, what's happening is that the public school system still has the same level of cost, but it's chipping away at the ability to pay that. And that's where the state has to set a priority. It has to essentially say, what is our top priority and how are we going to go with that?
Stephen, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Thank you for having me.
We've been speaking with Applied Economics Professor Stephen Deller of UW-Madison about the economics of Governor Walker's budget.